Hi, Johanna Bozua. Welcome to KABU.
Hi, Bill. Thanks so much for having me.
Johanna Bozua is a research associate, the chief energy analyst at the Democracy Collaborative. It advocates and models radical democracy at the local level, well known for creating worker-owned and controlled cooperatives in many communities. Their underlying principle, that is the underlying principle of Democracy Collaborative, is that true democracy must start in daily life when ordinary people of our extraordinary species, when they meaningfully participate in making the decisions that shape our lives. Johanna's research and activism is in local energy democracy. Her writing demonstrates that the only way to avert climate catastrophe is for communities to take over the electricity systems, to nationalize the corporate investor-owned utilities, then to build out very quickly clean, renewable energy production, and also to work to organize the community toward greatly reducing their greenhouse gas emissions. We'll get to that later. First, though, Johanna, tell us about what's happening in California today that makes local democratically run energy possible and necessary.
Sure, but the California wildfires that are raging through California are just barely contained now. Put in clear relief that California's investor-owned utility, electric and gas, PG&E, is not suited for the job of managing our energy systems. They were at least in part culpable for starting the campfires that have been the deadliest California wildfires to date because of the electrical power associated with their infrastructure. And this is not an isolated incident. They've been to have started 17 fires in 2017 alone. And the California Public Utilities Commission is starting to invest PG&E for their safety and have surfaced this idea of breaking up this large utility. But we don't need to just break it up. We need to bring it into public ownership. It's because we have these full guarantees of rates of return, but PG&E has been prioritized building grid and investing in the safety and maintenance for these communities that are now, you know, Butte County has something around 12,000 residents that are displaced right now. But PG&E is focused on boosting kind of their corporate profits and paying its executives millions. So instead of reinvesting, bundling it into kind of this growth shareholder model, but there's the opportunity here by bringing it into partnership that we could shift and do what California wants to being a climate leader by both creating more resilient grids and shifting toward more local energy and shifting away from a fossil fuel-based extractive economy and moving more sustainable energy models that are based on what the communities want and need, which is not how PG&E right now.
California, unlike most states, but there are some others, that they have programs called community choice aggregation, but it's basically a community choice program that people can set up, that the people in cities of any public entity, actually, a city, a county, a region, can vote to, in fact, take over the electricity system and to become a public utility. Tell us about that, and particularly about Alameda County.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that the community choice aggregation programs, there are about 19 in California right now, and it's projected to serve something like, I think, 2.5 million customers in California soon. And this just shows that Californians are hungry for public ownership of energy and taking the energy transition into their own hands for rapid mobilization toward community ownership of energy. I think that one of the greatest examples we have of this is the great organizing work that the local Clean Energy Alliance has done in the Bay Area. They now have what's called East Bay Community Energy, which gathered the energy needs and procurement needs of the surrounding cities and now have found ways to really localize the investment for renewable energy so that they can create a more resilient energy structure and that they can actually use this opportunity for energy procurement to invest in their communities and help build local jobs and local capacities in energy. And so I think that community choice aggregation really shows that with the opportunity for community agency, we can shift towards a more renewable future that's also based on equity. And I think that that's something the Local Clean Energy Alliance has been able to do, is an imbue democratization and equity into how their community choice aggregation runs right now, through having things like a board, an advisory committee of local community members that's telling the board what the community is actually asking for. And I think that we can reflect a lot of that if we are to take PG&E into public ownership and take some of the learnings that we have from community choice aggregation already in place and move it up in scale in California.
Give us a little more detail about what it means to have community energy. What are the sources? For example, rooftop solar, people investing their sums and their equity into producing electricity and then feeding it into the system and being paid a fair price for that. That's one of them. There are so many ways of reducing emissions and creating clean energy, but go through some of the things that are being done.
So I think you mentioned a good one, which is rooftop solar. This is really distributed energy where people are investing in making their own energy. I think that there's also opportunities for what is called community solar, in which people can pool together their funds. If they don't have a rooftop, that's great for solar. The amount they can produce on the top of their house doesn't cover all that they will need. They can invest in community solar, which is larger scale investments and installations that then they will receive the benefits of. And I think that another kind of piece here is we can get to the utility scale of renewable energy in community ownership through community choice aggregation, when the community has decision-making power in deciding where it's sited, how it's sited, who is seeing the benefits, who's actually installing it. Is it a local installer? Is it a organization, maybe a worker cooperative, that's doing this and is providing workforce development opportunities? So I think that we can imbue democracy into both the highly distributed rooftop solar, but it can go all the way in these publicly owned structures to kind of larger scale energy procurement as well.
This is KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick here talking to Johanna Bazua, who is a research analyst and does a lot of writing, some very interesting stuff recently. You can look her up. Her last name is, spell us your last name, B-O-Z-U-W-A. Johanna,
yep, that's right.
Johanna with a J. She's with the Democracy Collaborative, and then you can find links to her stuff. Johanna, let's get back to the enormous advantages of community energy in terms of just reliability and also speed of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. The days of big grids seem to be huge trillion-dollar grids. They're ended.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things, as we are seeing more wildfires hit California, is we are going to need to see investments in more localized renewable energy, particularly for this reason of resiliency. When you have climate-related events happening more often, you need to be able to take energy on and off the grid in more effective manners. Things like microgrids are going to help in building out some of that capacity. You can connect this to emergency shelters. You could have community solar that's on the top of, let's say, a local school that can act as an emergency shelter in these types of situations and provide that really necessary power in these moments of need. And that is something that I think could be facilitated and done if we were to take the grid particularly out of for-profit hands, as it is right now with PG&E, and move beyond just the energy procurement as something that is community-owned through community choice aggregation, move to a full system perspective so that we're not investing in large-scale transmission unless we really need it. And so thinking through how we make those decisions and who is at the table making those decisions. Is it for-profit corporations that want to make a return on investment because they get cash for capital infrastructure? Or do we want it to be something that's decided by communities when it is actually needed? And I think that that's what bringing PG&E into public ownership could help do, is build out more of those capacities for renewable energy that is locally and community owned, and make sure that we aren't having large-scale transmission build-outs unless we really need them.
Germany is very much like Oregon. They don't get that much sun, and yet Germany and many other places that are not as efficient in some kind of engineering sense as creating energy. But it turns out if energy is created at the point of use, even on a cloudy day, it doesn't have to be transmitted thousands of miles in which electrons are lost, and then, and it doesn't have to be transmitted through trillion-dollar grids that have to be highly securitized and invulnerable to the weather, which none of them are now, so they'd have to be all rebuilt. The grid, it seems to me, is now, climate change has made it financially unfeasible, but the power companies and the banks, they want to maintain their current system. Tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's one of the big issues with investor-owned utilities. They are allowed to make it sometimes, it's usually around 12% return on investment, kind of no matter what. And this means that they want to funnel that into their shareholders and not actually into investing
right.
in the grid.
They're regulated by the public utility commissions, and they're given the power to raise prices to make sure that they can pay their fairly high interest rates to the banks and rich investors.
Yes, exactly. And so I think that by moving closer to point of source, that is going to be a really big opportunity that investor-owned utilities, because of their incumbency and the way that they receive money, is not going to be of interest to them. And so I think that by shifting towards public ownership, the dynamics really change in who is making those decisions. And so we can work to localize energy to the amount that is possible and like increase the efficiency of that transmission. We will have to invest in better transmission lines, and we might need to do some build outs if we're going to have this large scale shift towards renewable energy, but we have to ensure that we're making these decisions for the right reasons and we're investing in a safe and reliable grid. One of the issues we're having with PG&E right now is that they have old transmission lines that they aren't taking care of and aren't ensuring are reliable and resilient and aren't putting people at risk, which is what we're seeing right now with these wildfires.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Joanna Bazua, who is a research analyst, writes a lot on the great virtues of local community energy, democratically run. You know, there's a lot of people, of course, would say, oh, the state would run it, a bunch of bureaucrats and lazy bureaucrats who won't really work in the public interest. And really what we need is the dynamism of the private sector. One thing about California, and one reason why community energy is so important, is in fact they have a lot of public utilities. The public utilities in Los Angeles, I believe, and Sacramento. In California, they see the relative dynamism of the Los Angeles public utility that's been selling electricity to people who live in their area much cheaper than Southern California Edison can dream of selling it. That's why many counties are moving towards public energy, because it's so much better managed. And the Sacramento public utility, SMUD, is extremely innovative and agile and also sells electricity a lot cheaper and is much more active in permitting feed-in tariffs. At least that's how I understand it.
Bill, I think you've hit the nail on the head with that. I completely agree. There's this concept that, I mean, you have public ownership, it enables, yeah, as you say, like so much bureaucracy, and it won't be for the community. But I don't think that is true. And I think you point to some really great examples at SMUD in LA that actually are dynamic and are innovative in a way that the investor-owned utilities aren't, because they aren't focused on corporate growth. They're focused on the ultimate shareholders, are the community members and their customers, which creates a very different dynamic. And I think that also we need to think about what efficiency means in these contexts. It's not about what your return on investment looks like per se, or how fast you can make your money back, but actually, how can you use the investments in renewable energy to build out for instance, really good jobs and eliminate things like energy poverty through this. So even if it's more expensive or, let's say, less efficient in the ways that kind of the capitalist terms of today, we can rethink what efficiency means, and efficiency should really be how it's serving community members. But public ownership across the board has really been shown, at least in the United States, to be cheaper than investor-owned utility service areas. If you look at American Public Power Association's research on this, they show that it is consistently cheaper in publicly owned service areas.
And, in fact, it helps in the development of, like, the Tennessee Valley Authority, which is the great example of, even though they're environmentally not so good because they dammed up a lot of rivers, that was in the 1930s, They basically electrified the South.
Right.
The private utilities would never touch it. It was only the Tennessee Valley Authority under the New Deal that brought electricity to not just the hollows of Kentucky and West Virginia and the rest of the South, but it brought it to all the big cities of the South that were also not appropriately powered because big capital just didn't want to do it. You don't make enough money on it.
Yeah, I think that's another really important point here, too. During the New Deal, essentially there was market failure, right? So the investor-owned utilities said, hell no, we're not going into these rural areas. We just can't make it. There's not that right bang for our buck. But there was this desperate need for rural electrification. And as you said, by investing both in rural electric cooperatives and TVA, though it is wrought with issues, there are problems of historical racism there. And those are things that we need to work on. I think that, again, we see that there's a current market failure that's happening with investor-owned utilities in which they aren't taking climate change seriously. And so that's why we do need state intervention, and we need to take this into public ownership to deal with that market failure. And so I think that we can also, at the same time as we're moving into more public ownership, redefine how public ownership operates so that it actually imbues equity and is thinking about how can we rapidly mobilize towards equitable renewable energy that serves the community and democratizes how decisions are made. So we're iterating upon the public ownership that we had that was initiated through the New Deal.
Johanna Bozua, thanks so much for talking to us.
Yeah, Bill, thank you so much for having me on. It's always a pleasure to talk and think through these really important questions with you and how we move forward. So really appreciate all that you do on the Old Mole, and look forward to listening in again sometime soon.
Whoa, oh, mercy, mercy me. Oh, things ain't what they used to be now. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Whoa, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be now. Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas. Fish full of mercury. Radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby by us die. Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more we use from man? Can't you stand it?